both SPFA, MBMA. I mean, you meet people and you learn things there you're not going to learn anywhere else. It enables you to not only be knowledgeable, but have a competitive edge over, you know, your competitors.
This is the one and only, the original podcast where you can find yours and your business's true value. You're listening to Our Value,
brought to you by America's Insulation Source, IDI Distributors.
You want to hear from the best contractors, suppliers, and consultants that dedicate themselves to more than just survival in the business world?
Industry professionals that are dedicated to excellence in every aspect of their business?
Our Value has them all here to share that same motivation and knowledge with you. Tune in and grow a more successful, profitable, educated, and recognized business. Listen to the Our Value podcast to become the industry leader in your market. Find your value with Our Value.
Well, Our Value Nation, I have a treat for you today. We are talking directly to some people heavily involved in the SPFA, heavily meaning one, Rick, who is the El Jefe Presidente. Rick is the man at the SPFA. He also heads up the Building Enclosure Committee with myself, and there's a gentleman on there named John, but John actually heads up the metal building initiatives, and a lot of the metal building work that's been done over the years was done by John Stahl at Preferred Solutions Incorporated. Just want to thank you guys for getting on today and welcome you to the podcast. You know, Rick, thank you so much. John, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
I want to really jump right into this. We've had some updates over the last few years with the metal building manufacturers. And I have to admit, just from my own background, I remember people saying, well, if you spray a Morton building, it's going to void the warranty. If you spray a metal sales building, it's going to void the warranty. If you spray a, you know, a certain type of fluted metal deck. And so I think what I really wound up coming to the conclusion of over the years is there's a lot of wives' tales, and then there's some things that had some truth to them. One of those was simply that there was a lot of things that would get said in order to try and keep things the way they were. And so as far as the SPFA, John, you want to give a little bit of your background on this and when you kind of started this road with the SPFA and the committee?
Sure. Well, my company's been a member of SPFA really since its inception, which I think is 2003, which means it's 20 years old this year, actually. And I was also involved in the predecessor organization. So I started getting involved in the foam business in 1980. So I'm one of the old timers in it. And I've always enjoyed being a SPFA member. I've been on several of the key committees dealing with the building envelope. I'm currently chair of the technical committee that basically reviews the standards of the other committees. And I got interested in the metal building industry quite a few years ago. There's two associations within the metal building industry. One is the Metal Building Manufacturers Association, called MBMA. And they're actually headquartered here in Cleveland, Ohio. And the fact that they're here had given me some initial interest and capabilities of, you know, visiting with them and trying to see where they're heading in terms of thermal insulation. And then the second group is the Metal Building Contractors and Erectors Association. And these are, you know, primarily the contractors that actually do the erection. And I gave an invited talk at the their convention a couple of years ago, and it was, you know, extremely well received. But after that presentation, you know, I got quite a few questions, you know, just dealing with the relationship between spray foam and metal buildings, primarily as a function of expansion and contraction, maybe the effect on oil canning. While I've made materials that are used in metal buildings, there's never been any really good documentation of what's working, what isn't working. So I decided to get more involved in those two trade associations. And as I got more into it, I started seeing more and more opportunities for spray foam. And I decided that we need to really get as much information as we can in front of everyone so that we do have good work practices to make sure the foam is installed properly, as well as good design practices, and try to get the metal building manufacturers, the metal building erectors, you know, to be comfortable with spray foam, because I don't think there's any question they see spray foam as the future, but it's really not going to be up to them to work out some of the details that I think we need to work out as a spray foam industry. With that in mind, then I proposed to the Building Envelope Committee that we set up a special task group on metal buildings. And pretty simultaneously with that, I'm on some of the committees of the Metal Building Manufacturers Association. So they see it was important enough also. So I initiated, we also have a kind of a parallel task force within the metal building industry.
Now, Rick, it was several years ago that you kind of got involved in one of the studies where you guys were painting samples and testing whether or not we actually ruined the finish. Is that correct? What's kind of the SPFA's history?
Yeah, that's correct, Ken. And back around 2014, we were shown by many of our contractors that there were letters written from different manufacturers of panels for metal buildings stating that they would not warrant their panels if spray foam was applied to them. So we got involved, and that group we got involved with were both the Metal Building Manufacturers Association and the Metal Construction Association. And so the MBMA, those are the groups that design and build the actual engineered metal buildings. Well, the Metal Construction Association is sort of the upstream group that provides the metal panels and the structural members used to make these buildings. And so there were several members of the Metal Construction Association that were worried about spray foam. And they had questions about the chemistry, about exotherms, and the like. So we initiated a project in 2014 where we looked at these particular issues. And one of the things that we wanted to investigate was if we use especially closed cell foam on these metal panels, what type of, or what will it cause oil canning? And another question we looked at was, will the exothermic temperatures generated by closed cell spray foam cause damage to the coatings, both on the inside and the exterior? And then in sort of more of a longer term type of study, if we apply spray foam directly to these coated metal panels, will it cause or will it accelerate UV damage to the exterior coatings on these panels, especially on the roofs? We initiated a program and we did some testing. We actually sprayed some test walls down in Houston with an MBMA member. And we looked at applying foam directly to the metal panels and with and without a barrier sheet, basically a Tyvek type or a non-woven type of fabric to avoid direct contact. And we found out that the closed cell foam, when you apply it properly with proper layers, pass thicknesses and picture framing, you don't get oil canning. And we looked at several different types of panel profiles. We also did some studies through one of our members in a laboratory where we looked at the exothermic temperatures in a lift of closed cell foam. We looked at the temperatures right at the surface where the foam initially contacts the metal panel and in the mid-pass thickness of the lift of foam. And of course, the mid-pass thickness, the temperatures can regularly get over 200 degrees Fahrenheit, which is normal. But what we found is that the surface where the foam actually touches the metal panel, it always stayed below about 150 degrees Fahrenheit. And we pointed out to the manufacturers that, hey, that's the temperature that a roof deck is typically going to see in a hot climate on a hot day. And so they were, at that point, they were, we showed them that, you know, that the temperatures aren't that severe from the exotherm, and they were actually very accepting of that. And the third part of the project we looked at was we apply foam directly underneath a metal panel, and we place that panel under UV exposure for several years. And recently we did get the results back from that. And again, as we expected, the direct contact with spray foam did not degrade or accelerate the degradation of the exterior paint or coating on those panels. We kind of knew that was going to happen because we've been making foam sandwich panels with metal for decades, and it seemed to be no issue, but we needed to prove that to the panel manufacturers. So that's been a successful part of our program. So yes, we've been involved. Kind of a long answer, but just wanted to let you know that, you know, we've been involved and been working very cooperatively with the metal building industries.
So, Rick, just as a side note, when I looked at the results of the, you know, paint fade, paint chalking, color retention, wasn't it in fact that certain colors, the life was actually extended on the foam Yes. samples? It outlasted the other.
Yeah, and it's probably some of that's within the noise, if you will, the variation in the results. But yes, it certainly indicates there's no degradation caused by spray foam whatsoever.
Well, that's your explanation. Mine is spray foam makes the world better. So, John, on the other side of that, though, you really spent a lot of time on some protocols, installation techniques, and developed the SPFA guideline, which then you in turn took that to the Metal Building Manufacturers Association. And evidently, they kind of adopted exactly what you said. It's as though it didn't even get changed.
Well, I think we need to clarify that a little, Ken, to kind of follow up with what Rick was saying. The Metal Construction Association, which, as Rick said, is basically the coil coaters and the roll formers of the metal roofing and siding, they had issued a bulletin quite a few years ago after the study that Rick just mentioned was completed. And essentially, what the document said back then, which is similar to what it says now, is from their perspective, there is not really an issue or a concern about spray foam being sprayed on the interior surface of metal siding or metal roofs that are through fastened directly to the structural steel. They still have concerns about the interaction between spray foam and the metal roofing when the roofs are designed what they call standing seam roofs that are basically installed in clips that are like fastened at the eave and then they expand and contract at the peak. So you have a considerable amount of movement of that standing seam roof. And so their updated guide or technical bulletin still has that reservation. But the good thing about the revision is we were able to get them to finally include the information about the good performance with the paint. So that MCA bulletin primarily originated with the work that, you know, Rick and others of us performed, you know, many, many years ago. Maybe just to follow up on your question, if I understand the broader question is, I have been directly involved in some of the studies that the metal building manufacturers have been funding over the last 2.5 years or so. One major study was dealing with air leakage, and one major study is ongoing now dealing with hygrothermal performance or the movement of moisture, you know, within these assemblies. And the reality of about 15 buildings, metal buildings that we actually field tested by blower door testing of the entire building, a couple of buildings that had spray foam in them performed dramatically better than the fiberglass systems, which are the traditional insulation materials used there. The metal buildings, actually, most of them were close to meeting some of the current air leakage requirements. But as these air leakage requirements are getting more stringent, as the states adopt some of the more the newer energy codes, they're going to have some problems with air leakage, and that's creating a big opportunity, you know, for the spray foam. So I got deeply involved in that. I actually went into the field and witnessed some of that testing, so I kind of know what was done, what not was done, and you know, we have that piece of information.
John, I have a question on that.
Sure.
And I never thought of this before. I don't know why I didn't, but you know, you've got states, Massachusetts, specifically New York, which is really trying to downsize the load on their grid. Would it behoove any of the contractors there maybe to reach out to you to, you know, for sure join the SPFA, jump on the committee, but try and get their state to, you know, I guess offer some sort of code advancement for using spray foam in those locations, because there's so much loss due to air leakage and these states are trying to get to net zero? Wouldn't this be a great marketing go-ahead for someone in those states with every building erector?
Well, maybe Rick could comment on this as well, but you know, essentially that's happening, Ken, because as the states adopt the newer building codes that reference the new energy codes, these energy codes are definitely getting more stringent in terms of air leakage. Like, give you an example, in the state of Washington, I think they have a requirement that the air leakage in the building can't be more than 0.25 CFM, you know, per square foot, which basically is the Corps of Engineers standard, okay? Other states are going to be moving in that direction. So that's one thing that's going to happen. Some of the newer energy codes, including existing in Washington, are having to do blower door tests of the whole building. So that's going to flush out the difference between the fiberglass systems and the foam systems. And another thing that's happening in these codes is they're going to have to start doing third-party verification in the field of air leakage. And, you know, there's a lot of contractors that put in materials that are touted as air barriers, but the joints aren't being sealed properly, penetrations, et cetera. So when they start doing third-party inspections, they're going to have to go back and reseal all that stuff, and where the foam, you know, basically does that automatically. So I think the trend in the codes is going to be taking care of that air leakage issue. While it's a little preliminary to say this, I'm involved with some consultants that essentially can show how to do trade-offs between air leakage and R value. Because, you know, a lot of these studies are showing that maybe you're losing 40% of the energy consumption through air leakage. So if you can show that the spray foam stops or dramatically improves the air leakage, you can calculate what energy is saved. You can balance that off with the R values, so that there's applications that, you know, I'm involved in right now where the prescriptive code requirement may require 4 inches of foam, but through calculation, we can show 2 inches of foam is compliant. And then tied in with some of these software programs like ComCheck, it becomes more straightforward. So I'm digressing a little bit, but all this is directly related to metal buildings as well as, you know, more conventional construction. The other activity of the metal building industry, dealing with the moisture movement, that's becoming a real problem, because what we're seeing as we put more and more insulation in buildings, particularly in the northern climates, the heat in the building is no longer getting to the siding and roofing. Therefore, the siding and roofing gets colder. Therefore, you have increased condensation. And these hygrothermal analysis are showing, with certain combinations of interior conditions, exterior environments, you can actually get moisture accumulation occurring in those wall and roof assemblies. Well, that is a no-no, because that means you're going to start getting corrosion of the steel. You're going to get the fiberglass insulation to get saturated, which basically loses its R value. And I can just tell you firsthand that the metal building industry and the fiberglass manufacturers are quite frankly wrestling with some of these findings and how they're going to report the findings and what's the effect and this and that. So this whole thing about hygrothermal analysis is also really opening up the door for spray foam.
Well, and that leads to your other point, though, from earlier when I was talking about the protocol. I was surprised to see them adopt it, but I'd always figured if I'm going to not spray directly to the panel and I'm going to have something between, this corrugated panel and my spray foam, I've got all these little gaps that maybe it's dark brown, maybe it's blue, maybe it's white, but it's going to get hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold. It's going to have an air barrier on both sides. We're going to be making water in those flutes. And so I was always a proponent of spraying direct to the metal. Now, how did that conversation go, or what feedback did you get from them when you were talking to them about whether or not to spray to a panel or to some sort of bond breaker?
We did look into that, and you're right. Ken, spraying directly to a panel is actually going to be a better way to go than to look at a bond breaker, unless there is some concern with replacing a panel. I mean, there's always the case where you may get hail damage on a roof and aesthetically it's not pleasing. How do you replace that panel if you've basically glued it to the framing or the structure with closed cell foam? That's the only time I would consider maybe using a bond breaker if that's a concern. But the other answer is you can, put another panel on top. But, in many buildings, it's not a big concern. It's on the roof. You don't really see, the hail damage. But to John's point about the code changes, the other part of this is that not only are we requiring buildings that are more airtight, we're also requiring buildings that have continuous insulation. And the answer of a roll of fiberglass with a plastic vapor retarder as metal building insulation, that really does not provide continuous insulation, whereas spray foam can be sprayed on the inside, can cover, of course, the panels, but can also cover all the structure that support these panels. So you get literally zero thermal bridging. And with that is taken into account, again, you can reduce the amount of R value that you need because now you have a continuous layer of insulation.
I like that. And, I look at also the 179D, which is this massive rebate that's out there right now for commercial structures, up to $5 a square foot. And in that software, John was mentioning some of the trade-off softwares. In that particular software, I have seen on the 179D calculator online where I can do an R24 of spray foam versus an R, say, 49 of fiberglass. And that R24, they put a caveat in there with air sealing. To John's point, that's what foam's main issue is. So an R24 with air sealing would move me to the point where I was already saving 25% of the energy use in that building. And then I only had to do smaller measures to get the rest of my rebate. So there is a lot coming, and I do see a bigger trade growing in terms of large building testing or, full building testing for air testing. But so, John, what are the next steps for what you've got planned for the SPFA task force?
Well, essentially, I believe we need to be concentrating more on these standing seam roof applications. That seems to be the primary concern of the manufacturers and the erectors. And I know that there are definitely buildings in the United States that have been in for quite a few years, metal buildings with standing seam roofs, where the foam has been sprayed. And so one of the key next steps that I believe is very important is to reach out to hopefully our SPFA members and try to see if we can locate some of those buildings that have been in for a while and actually, you know, do some on-site inspections to really determine what's working, what's not working. I've talked with a few contractors in the past few months. I think Rick has too. I can think of one in, actually he's in the Houston area that tells me he's got several buildings that he's trying to make arrangements to visit. I think Rick got a call or we got a reference from someone about a contractor that sprayed a standing seam roof, but actually satisfy the concerns about expansion contraction, actually designed some expansion and contraction joints into the standing seam roof. So that sounds like a step forward. So that's another design and application that, you know, we need to follow up on and, you know, kind of see what's working. Rick, I, and I guess some of the Beck people or the task force people, we put together an email that was, as far as I know, Rick, it went out to all the SPFA members asking for information of their experience with metal buildings, and we got a very poor turnout.
And I want to address that because we sent that out to all of our IDI contractors as well. I crafted another email. And I guess what I would say during this podcast is if you're listening to this and you've done a standing seam metal roof with closed cell spray foam in the last 75 years, I'm just going to go all the way back to Otto Bayer. Yeah, but if you've done one of those, we would love to know about it because this is one of the sticking points. And if you've got one out there that we can go visit, we can use, it can be, you know, photographed, studied, and shared with the metal building manufacturers, then we've got some more to stand on because we really do need that. In fact, if you're listening to this podcast, the truth is you, if you've made it this far, you probably spray metal buildings. I would tell you one of the greatest things I think you need to do is join the SPFA, help out with these committees, and help us move this forward. If we're talking about getting codes changed where spray foam becomes more of a preferred solution for metal buildings, or if we're talking about knocking down old wives' tales, all these are things that make your business money. And to me, it's tragic if you don't know what the industry is doing. And also if you're not at the forefront of what the industry is doing, I would throw out a statement that a contractor who is involved in the SPFA and in these types of committees is going to be more of an authority on a job site than someone that's not.
Absolutely.
And Ken, I'd also like to add, when we ask for that information, I want to let everyone rest assured that that's going to remain confidential. The details, you know, the owner of the building, who did the work, whose foam, that's not important. The only thing that's maybe somewhat important is what climate it's in and maybe the approximate size of the building. So, you know, we're going to safeguard any type of information that you know, if you're worried about that getting out, that's, you know, we'll protect you from that. But what we really need, like John said, is to show the metal building industry that yes, these roofs work and we can apply foam in this climate or that climate, and there's, you know, there it's without issue. Or in some cases, you know, here are some optional workarounds, like the case that John mentioned earlier. So we definitely like to hear from you. And you can contact either myself or John, and you know, we can handle that information for you.
And I would just add one more thing is that even though, you know, our real need or concentration is on these standing seam roofs, I think any information we could find where foam has been sprayed in a metal building and, you know, is either working great or maybe there were some problems. We need to know what the problems are. And most of these problems, I think, are solved by, you know, application methods such as picture framing, you know, et cetera, to, you know, reduce the deflection or the oil canning. And, you know, one of the goals of our task force as well is to update the SPFA 134 technical document on metal buildings, which is, you know, quite outdated. But part of that would be bringing in some of these work practices that can be of value to the contractors. And, you know, just the kind of information that we're talking about here, access to various reports, et cetera, you're just never going to get this kind of information by, you know, Googling and stuff. I mean, I can't tell you how beneficial the committee work in both SPFA, MBMA has been. I mean, you meet people and you learn things there you're not going to learn anywhere else. And it enables you to not only be knowledgeable, but have a competitive edge over, you know, your competitors, whether those competitors are fiberglass contractors or even other foam contractors. Because this is, you know, it's like when laptops came out. You either got involved in it or you didn't get involved. The ones that got involved in it, they benefited. The ones that didn't, it was to their detriment. There's no neutral ground in some of these new technologies and fits. You either get involved, learn the opportunities and jump on it, or your competitors do it to you. So that's my firsthand experience in committee work.
And there's one other thing I'd like to add too, and this is maybe something, you know, looking towards the future, is that when we did that study in 2014 and 15, and I mentioned we sprayed foam directly onto these coated metal panels. And many of these coated metal panels will have, like, for example, a white primer on the inside surface. What we found in that study is that foam doesn't adhere particularly well to that white primer. And if you were doing that job, of course, you would want to check your adhesion, and you would probably end up having to do some surface preparation, whether that's a primer, an additional primer, or something else to get the foam to properly adhere. Now, working with the Metal Construction Association and their desire for us to use more foam, we can envision a time where maybe they will realize that, okay, yeah, adhesion is a little bit of an issue. Let us start making using primers that's going to work really well with spray foam. So that kind of cooperation with the panel manufacturers will actually lower our cost to install, so we don't have to add additional primers. So little things like that, by working together, you know, with these other industries, can benefit everyone. So, you know, again, that's something in the future to talk about, but that's just an example of how this cooperation works.
I totally agree. And I would say one thing, Rick, and that is, when in my time with Kills, Bear, moved a lot of primer, we always told the door manufacturers, the window manufacturers, the panel manufacturers, hey, when you use this type of a primer, if you pre-prime, you have to reprime. And that's because our goal was to get the door to Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever without the scratch. And so those primers were actually designed to weld themselves together. When someone would put Kills on their bathroom on Sunday and then wait till the next week to paint over it, we could peel the paint off in sheets because its bonding time was 24 hours after it was put on. And then by Wednesday, or, you know, 4 days later, 50% of something's ability to stick to it was gone, because it was busy welding itself together. Flat paint is one of the best surfaces to adhere to, actually. But regardless, I think it's, you know, it really is a reason to be involved.
Yeah, my experience is that, you know, in the last, I don't know, 10 years, they're actually doing something a little different with primers. So that I think there's certain, I'm sorry, not with primers, with the material that's put on the metal panels, the shop coats, if you will, because, you know, I'm getting more involved in projects where we've determined primers are not necessary, but there's different coatings they're putting on the interior surfaces of these panels. So part of our guidance might also be, you know, which coatings on metal panels do not need primers. Because not all of them do. So
that would be good.
I don't want the audience to think you always got to use primers. That's another whole step. Okay, so that was one point. Second point is, the testing that we did, et cetera, et cetera. We've kind of talked about closed cell, but I think everything that we learn means that this knowledge base is also valid for open cell in many cases. And one of the things that I'm finding in high growth thermal analyses is you actually can use open cell in a lot of locations that have kind of been considered not technically suitable. And the economics between open cell and closed cell is so different that part of this is to determine, you know, under what conditions can open cell be used, including in metal buildings. So I just wanted to not let open cell drift off the topic. And then back to that thing about the putting the fabrics on the surfaces. No, I know jobs that they've used the fabric or Tyvek type materials to avoid the difficulties of replacing the exterior panels, and they're working great. And high growth thermal analysis shows it's okay in certain conditions. So I don't want to kind of leave the audience with the thinking that these membranes are not suitable in certain cases.
I think that's really wise to say, because even if we, had Dr. Joe on the call or someone like that, it would all be about the ability to wick, about capillary action, about the ability to dry. If it can drip off, if it can dry out, if there's airflow, from the bottom to the top, there's all kinds of reasons that would make it acceptable. So I agree with you. It's a design consideration and something that they should address job by job.
Well, one other thing, Ken, I should mention is I was instrumental in getting quite a few pages put into a document called the Energy Design Guide for Metal Buildings. And this is something that the Metal Building Manufacturers Association put together, and it was revised a couple years ago. And there's quite a constructive sections in there about spray foam. And I think I'll check into this, but I think you can actually download a kind of a summary version of that off their website. But it's a really good reference point, and it shows, spray foam being used in all the different combinations, including in standing seam roofs, not necessarily saying that there's not, issues that need to be addressed. But the point of it is, I was able to, get that in there. And I think part of my ability to develop that relationship with the association was not only my company's capabilities, but also the knowledge that I gained through being involved in the SPFA committees. Because while I was not representing the SPFA, the fact that I could tell them I'm on the key committees, here's what's going on in SPFA, it gave a lot of credibility. And that's the same thing that I think we all need, is additional credibility. And you certainly can use the SPFA membership and committee work as an asset to that.
I wholeheartedly agree. In fact, I want to, just before we end, I'd kind of like to throw out a teaser, because I know there's other things. What other hot topics that you guys know of? I don't want to give them all the answers, but what other hot topics is the SPFA working on?
One of the things that we're certainly going to be busy with over the next few years is addressing the PFAS legislation, PFAS. And essentially what that is, new legislation is being considered in several U.S. states that would ban the use of materials containing intentionally added PFAS. So what's PFAS? Well, it's the blowing agents that we use in closed cell foam. So this is a pretty significant threat to the industry. And we need to work very hard at the state levels to help educate these legislators and understand what the impacts are, what they could be proposing. And by the way, PFAS also includes things like refrigerants that are used in heat pumps and air conditioners and refrigerators. And they're almost identical and grouped together right there with blowing agents. So we do need some help. So That's one of the things that we're going to be looking for contractors and members in these states to help us with these advocacy campaigns over the next year or two. So that's a big one that we're working on.
Ken, another topic that I have not introduced to the SPFA yet, but I'm going to during our next building envelope committee meeting, is this question about what types of buildings are exempt from the building codes. The general feeling is that agricultural buildings are exempt from the code. So you've got a lot of foam contractors out there just going into this pole building, spraying foam and leaving it exposed. And, you know, at least I know in Ohio for sure, unless that those buildings are actually used for storage of either grains or animals or implements, those buildings are all covered by building code. And the contractors just don't understand that. And so even though, you know, we have the SPFA document on thermal ignition barriers, I'm going to be looking further into getting better guidance of requirements for these agricultural buildings, because that's the kind of information that a contractor really needs to keep their eye out for. And that's just another way we can be of benefit to the contractors.
Yeah, and without letting the cat out of the bag, I would say that on that one, it goes much farther. It's state by state.
Yes.
It depends on if I do any welding, if I have got anyone hired working in there, if it's a place of employment. Any of those kick off the need for a thermal barrier, as well as, we all know some of the things that have happened more recently. But if the USDA gets involved, that's something you worked on, about whether or not if there's a loan on that property, then they want the foam covered, and most insurance companies do. So there's a lot of that. But also, I think if I'm looking at, you know, why be involved with the SPFA, even the things that are happening with the new blowing agents and how the new blowing agents and lift thickness is affecting foam and what's happening, these are things that if I'm a lone wolf contractor, I never even find out about them. But Rick, you know, John, we've both been there during the building enclosure committee meeting where people are talking about the fact that they're seeing these foams do some pretty wild things when they're sprayed too thick, too hot, incorrectly, and all of that. So I think that there's a world of information that you find out once you get in and get involved. That was definitely some good subject matter. And I really want to thank both of you for getting on the podcast today, taking time out of your days to, you know, help educate our contractors and hopefully gain some of them on our committees in the SPFA. So thank you, John, and thank you, Rick, for your time today.
Well, thank you, Ken,
for the opportunity, Ken. Thanks.
Absolutely. Well, there you go, guys, out there in R Value podcast land, all you guys and gals that are out there spraying foam and working hard every day. We hope this information has been a benefit to you. If you have questions on spray foam, fiberglass, any of the products we sell, or resources to help grow your business, by all means, reach out to your local branch, to any of us at IDI, where we look forward to earning your business every day.